Keith Wooden, and welcome to Story Mosaics. Hey, so many of you have been joining us, and we really appreciate that. Week after week, our audience is growing, and more people are listening to Story Mosaics because you believe in one fundamental thing, is that everyone has a story. We can help you tell your story better, and we want to work together at that. And so we're very excited about what's taking place. A couple of weeks ago, we had Delaine share her story about a very significant event that happened in the Philippines. And because of that, we have a whole bunch of people that now listen to us in the Philippines. Thank you from the Philippines, and thank you for sharing this in the Philippines and letting others know about these life-changing stories that take place in people's lives. And we have some people who listen to us in South Africa. One of them is the name of Ilma, and Ilma was the one in South Africa where we were working in the Limpopo area to do a missions trip there. And when we were there, one of the things we did was we stayed at the Moana Game and Bird Hunting Preserve, and we stayed at a little rendezvous. The neatest thing about a rendezvous is it's a circular hut, sometimes built out of brick, sometimes built out of stone, sometimes built out of thatch, sometimes built out of mud bricks, always with a thatch roof, though. And they're beautiful little huts to live in, and it was so beautiful. We went to sleep every night with the calls of lions and hyenas. We heard the wild dogs that were barking in pursuit of their dinner, if you will, all across that beautiful area. And it was a moving time for us. It was so fun. And one of the things that we learned about was that South Africa has a unique animal populations. You've probably heard of the Big Five in South Africa, okay? Or actually all across Africa. You've heard of the lions and the leopards. You've heard of the Cape buffalo, and their powerful Cape buffalo. You've heard of the rhinos and the elephants. And we had a chance to go up to a very interesting area. We were in Kruger National Park in that same area. Kruger National Park is just a massive area that's a habitat for the wild animals in their settings. And there's nothing that you can see in this United States that compares. You can go to any of the zoos, and as wonderful as they are in trying to preserve present a natural habitat, they just don't match it. And Kruger is this wild area that you go through on a specially made Jeep. And we went across the land that is 7,523 square miles. That's how big Kruger is. That is, if you take the state of Pennsylvania and kind of turn it on its end, that is the same size as Kruger. 4 million acres of wildlife. And one of the things we experienced on that trip was there was a cheetah that was laying there, just had finished it gorging, and its stomach was so huge, it was not a threat to us at all because it could hardly move anymore. So we got a really close-up encounter with a cheetah that had brought down its game, and it was lying there beside the game that it had eaten. And then we went a little further, and we saw a rhino out in the bush. Interestingly enough, I was the first one to see the rhino out there because I didn't fully understand this, but I'm colorblind, and because I'm colorblind, I could see the rhino before others could see it. His camouflage, if you will, looked absolutely silly to me, so I could see the rhino out there. There's one point where we found this huge bull elephant that was walking towards us. They stopped the Jeep. It wasn't a good idea to try to retreat from it. We stopped the Jeep, and there's a man who sits on the front right-hand corner of the Jeep there that is our guard, if you will. He's the only one that's allowed to be armed in any way, but he was out there, and hardly ever use their firearm. It would only be in an emergency. That great big bull elephant with tusks that came up about 5 feet out in front of him raised its trunk, literally touched him on the face, and he never flinched. Oh, that was an amazing encounter. Well, we had our own encounters at the little area of the Moana Game Preserve. And when I'm saying that, some of you are thinking I'm saying Moana, which is the Disney movie. It's not the same, okay? There's no expansive water there. And this is a game preserve that's so beautiful and so packed with beautiful elements. And sometimes in the evenings, we could see the shadows of giraffe. We could see the shadows of zebra on the horizon there. It was a beautiful, beautiful wild game preserve. But one of the things that it had there that was very unusual, because I talked about the Big Five, but what you don't know is that's really the Big Six. There is one animal that is native to Africa that kills more humans than all of the Big Five put together. The lions kill about 20 people a year. But this man-eater, actually he doesn't eat him because he's an herbivore, but this man-killer kills over 200 people per year, more than all of the others put together. And yet he's never mentioned as the big six. It's a hippo. Yeah, I'm telling you that the hippo is the most dangerous animal there. And especially when you think about the beautiful little hippos and how cute they are and stuff like that, and how they present them, and how you hear the Christmas story, I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. When you hear that kind of stuff, we all kind of think of them as these little fluffy, not so fluffy animals of Africa. But they're dangerous, I'm telling you. And we had a hippo right there in our encampment. And he would come up at dusk each evening. He would rise out of this primordial lagoon and step up on the bog of the shore, and his weight would literally squeeze the water out underneath his hooves there that were the size of a large dinner plate. And then he would walk up, and he'd be 2 feet from our faces, with tusks that were between 6 and 12 inches long, and they would have such a crushing force that they would penetrate the body of a human being and kill him immediately. And there is our hippopotamus, just 2 feet from us, right behind an electric fence. I would love to tell you that his name was Maximus, Maximus the hippo. But the fact is, he was really kind of the pet of the preserve, and they called him Hippie. Hippie the hippo. Hippie the hippo. Kind of spoils my story of wanting to be like some of my friends that have conquered the big five. I have Hippie the hippo behind an electric fence. And what's more, we're feeding him his bedtime snack. We motion for him to open his mouth wide, and that gaping jaw comes almost unhinged, and then we throw into his throat these whole watermelons. He closes his mouth, and the juices just drool down the side of his face, and he crushes that watermelon with ease. And then he'd open it again, and we'd throw in a pumpkin. And you know how tough the skin of that pumpkin is. You know that it is so difficult to break into a pumpkin, but he would crush it with no problem at all. And so we became kind of good friends with Hippie. He became our friend, and he'd come up there every evening, and we'd talk to him. And every once in a while, we'd break the boundary of reaching past and touch his nose, because other people we had seen touched Hippie the hippo. But one time we were coming back from our mission there, and Ilma, thanks for joining us, because Ilma was our hostess there at our mission and ministering to the kids there in Limpopo. But we came back from our trip there one evening, and we just noticed the whole atmosphere of the camp was different. And we turned a corner as we came in the drive, and as we started our way down to our rendezvous, we noticed that there was a Jeep there, and it was at an odd angle. The front of it was down on the ground, the bumper literally snarled and broken off, and there were two huge hoof prints the size of Hippie's hooves on the top of that Jeep. He had reared up and crushed the area where the engine is, and on the hood of that left his imprint of his hooves there. You see, Hippie was no longer a little hippo anymore. About 2,000 to 2,500 pounds of hippo that just took it out on a Jeep. But that evening, here he was, walking up out of the lagoon to us and coming towards us and opening his big mouth, and we were feeding him. That was the last night we would feed the hippo, not because something bad happened to him. We were going to be leaving. And so the next morning would be our last morning there at the rendezvous, and our last day on the preserve. And I had set up kind of a routine. I'd go running every morning. And some of you are watching this on YouTube or looking and saying, Keith runs. Doesn't look like a runner. And I know I don't have the sleek physique that you're used to in seeing a man of athletic prowess, but I used to run. And so I didn't run fast. I'm not saying I was an amazing runner. In fact, the fastest run that I ever clocked in the Indy mini marathon that I did, 13.2 miles. I think I did the very first one, and I probably did 15, 16 over the years. The fastest time I ever clocked was a 10 minute mile. 5.4 miles an hour was my peak rate. I say that because it's going to have indicative and implications for what took place the next morning. I got up and I started on my normal routine, and I looked out and there's this fog that's just enveloping the lagoon, and I tried to soak it in all in. This would be the last picture I had and of a mental image of that beauty of that lagoon there. And the fog just hung just an inch or so above the water. I took a step down from the porch, and at the base of the porch, there was the wire that I unhooked for the electric fence, stepped through, and then I rehooked it. And now I was out in that lagoon area, and my normal routine was just to walk a little bit and just take in the morning air and take in the sounds that were emanating from the forest that was around us. And it was such a peaceful place. And then I realized after I'd gotten about 50 yards away from the camp, I realized that I had to, what did they used to say? I had to see a man about a horse. And so I stepped over to a bush there. Oh, it reeked of scat and urine. I figured somebody else had been there before me, I guess. And so I went ahead and relieved myself there. And I had no sooner done that than I heard the water start to break across the lagoon. And soon the ears twitched above the water. And then these red eyes of Hippie emerged. And then his nose. And when his nose came out of the water, I heard this loud. That noise of a hippo can be heard over 2 miles away. It is an alert to tell all the other hippos of the danger of what is there, but it is also there to let the intruder know that he is on that hippo's property. See, I had just marked Hippo's bush. Hippie was not happy. He immediately submerged beneath that, and the swirls of fog were so beautiful and so menacing in the same moment. And he submerged because hippos don't swim. They actually run along the bottom of the lagoon. And he took off, and I could see the ripples of his massive body coming towards me. And I started to run. This is the first time I had ever really run. 5.4, I bet I was going faster. I was an Olympian for the very first time. The wind was in my hair and I could feel it. Oh, it was exhilarating. And at the same time, I thought, I'm dead meat. You see, hippos can run 5 miles an hour underwater. And every once in a while, as I was running towards the end of the lagoon, Hippie would come up to the top just to take a reference to where I was at and alter his course so he could intercept me. And each time he did, I heard that menacing. And he altered his course, sank back down, and submerged it in the ripples of water I could see coming toward me again. 3 times he did it as he made his way across the lagoon, and yet I was almost to the point of the lagoon where these scrags of trees were there, dead trees that kind of blocked the end of the lagoon, and then there were reeds all in that area, and I was hoping if I could just make it to that area before he did, I could get through that, and he would at least be slowed down as he made his way through those trees and those reeds. But nothing was stopping Hippie. Hippie was running at full force, and trees gave way as he was making his way through that. And reeds, they were nothing. I was just past the point when he started to come out of the lagoon and onto land. And that was game on. Because you see, though he could just run 5 miles an hour in the water, a hippo can run 30 miles an hour for a short sprint when out of the water. And I could not outrun him. Deep breath. As he emerged from the water, I looked back just long enough to see the drips of water staining the sands that were there at the edge of the lagoon. And I just caught the menacing tusks that extended from his mouth. And he was enraged. In fact, his eyes were a blood red. In fact, that blood red eye has a name that among hippopotamus studiers, that it is the red death. That's what he was intending to do to me. Just as I rounded the corner, there was an area where they were building a road, and they had already used the bulldozers to excavate a lot of the road. So it was a smooth area, and not really dirt, not really sand, just a milly type of earth there. And I recognized that that's where I could fall to the prey of the hippopotamus. But just up ahead, there was something that emerged that was so interesting, because they had made their way around this big tree there. It was a ficus tree, and I don't know what the purpose of their doing this, but they had left a 3-foot mound of dirt around the base of the tree, that where they had just made room for the roots to stay attached to the ground, and then the tree rose above. I'm sure that it was decorative in nature, but for me, it was a lifeline. It was as if somebody had just thrown me a life preserver, and I found my way to the roots of that base. I grabbed the roots and I began to climb that 3 foot up onto that base. The problem is, if you remember that Jeep story, he can rear up that high. And I was still not out of danger at all. And so what took place then, the next moment, is I did something that I hadn't done since my childhood. When I was growing up in Carmel, we had 4 trees in our backyard. Each one of us boys had one of the trees, and my sister had an apple tree as well. And then my parents had an apple tree. And we would shinny up those apple trees, and we would go out on the branches of those apple trees and pick the apples and then bring them back down, and we would make cider and applesauce and all of those things. Well, suddenly I was a 10-year-old again, and I grabbed a hold of that tree and I started to shinny. Now I know some of you are looking at me and say, Keith shinnies? Okay, can we have enough of that? Can we just have enough of that for right now? Yes, Keith shinnies when he's being chased by a hippo. So I started shinning up a tree. It's a ficus tree, and it's not a smooth ficus. It has these branch areas as they go up, kind of what you might view as a palm tree. And as I shinnied up there, I'm making pretty good headway. And the important thing was how it impacted the chase. Because when the hippo came to that spot, he could smell me, but he couldn't see me, because the hippo's eyesight is mostly towards the front. He cannot really look up very high. Doesn't need to. That's not his area of concern. And so he knew I was there. He knew he smelled me, but he couldn't see me. For 30, maybe 40 or 45 minutes, I clung to that tree in a death grip, in this case, a life grip. Soon, Hippie became bored and walked back to the lagoon. And as I watched him submerge, I realized I could breathe again. I hope that as I'm telling this story, you're having a whole lot more fun than what I was. And some of you have done things after you heard this story and my running prowess and my shinning prowess, and you have laughed at my plight. No one was laughing in South Africa at that moment, least of all me. Well, actually, everyone at the roundabout when I got back was laughing. It was an adventure. And then as I tell this story here in the States, people start sending me things. I mean, I do not need another stuffed hippo. Please do not send me hand-carved hippos. Please do not send me these little squishy toys of hippos. I have enough of them, and they are an insult to my manhood. And I know that that's why you do this. And it's the very reason why I'm recording this on the first Tuesday of December. It is not the Christmas story, okay? I know that. But soon we will hear the song. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. You know what? Somebody has even done this. Someone gave my dog a hippopotamus so that my dog now carries this around and mocks me with his battle of his hippopotamus. That little tail, those short little legs. Oh. You know, sometimes we just need a good laugh. And I hope that this has just been your good laugh at the beginning of this holiday season. I'm so excited for the true meaning of Christmas. The fact that a child was born, for unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. We're looking forward to Christmas. I hope that you'll share this humorous story with others just for the fun of it and enjoy this season and keep joining us. And please, would you do me a favor? Just go out there. Let us know you're hearing it. Send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Go out to the Facebook where it's Story Mosaics, or the email is story.mosaics1@gmail.com. It's there on the screen if you're watching on YouTube. And don't forget to go out to our website and do us a favor. Like us, subscribe to us, and then please rate us so that we can get this message, not the humorous message of a hippo, but there's a very important story to be told, your story. Thanks for joining us on Story Mosaics.